I am Conor MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod, and I am immortal.
We have a dead guy named Nash.
You talk funny, Nash. Where are you from?
Lots of different places.
I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain.
Well, everybody's got their problems.
You're alive. Why didn't he die?
Hey, it's a kind of magic.
Hi, I'm Candy.
Of course you are.
Hello and welcome to Another Time MacLeod, the only podcast, to our knowledge, dedicated to delving into the 1986 cult classic Highlander, scene by wonderful scene. I'm your host, Rob Wallace, and as always, it's a pleasure to say I'm joined by McKinsman, Mr. Rob Daniel.
And as always, it is a pleasure beyond measure to be here.
And today we are flying solo.
We are, yes, we haven't done one of these for a while. I think the last time we were flying solo was when we were talking about the training montage up on
yes,
the bluff.
Up on Cullen Knack, something or other, which I can then, you know, I'll splice myself saying this so it'll be seamless.
Yes, indeed. Please do a record scratch or something. it has been a while, hasn't it? But yes, so these should be shorter episodes. They're going to be an hour each.
Well, I say, we'll be flying solo for this and for the next episode. And, well, today we're talking about Moran and Bedso's trip to the hospital to visit Kirk Batunas, who has survived the Kurgan, well, I think as he puts it himself, putting three feet of steel through his gut.
How you doing, kid? Okay, I guess I got 3 feet of steel crammed through his gut.
That's right, he has. So what's the time code for this one?
The time code for this one is 1 hour and 22 minutes and 19 seconds, or 1:22:19, to 1 hour, 24 minutes, 33 seconds, or 1:24:33.
Yes. And I'm a little bit surprised by the fact that Kirk survived the encounter with the Kurgan, particularly as I think you mentioned off mic that, well, if he was run through, he would either be sliding around on that sword.
Yeah, the Kurgan picks him up with it. It would presumably cut him in half.
If not, the organ damage would be catastrophic. I mean, Kirk has made us some pretty tough stuff. But then, I was thinking, the most recent Scream film, there's an opening attack on this little slip of a girl, and she survives that. Mm. And it's like, oh, actually, I think that Kirk got off lightly compared to what happens at the opening of the most recent Scream film. It's like, really? She survived that? Okay.
Do we think, and actually, it's not, I need to go back and rewatch the scene to see if it's evident if he is. Do you think he's wearing a bulletproof vest? And that might be partly why when the Kurgan picks him up, it doesn't just go straight through him, because the vest gives some resistance.
Because
they don't notoriously resist stabbing very well. But
we see that wonderful T-shirt.
Oh, God, of course. So, of course, he can't be wearing a bulletproof vest.
Hey, Moscow, up yours. Because that would explain it, that the Kurgan would be powerful enough to run through Kevlar, but he's not wearing a vest. Which you think is actually a bit of a
character?
Well, just a mistake by maybe Kurt, because in this scene he says, "I got all these guns," and he actually lists all the guns he's got. He's got a 357.
Can't protect myself.
And ammo up the ass. I can't protect myself.
I got me a 357. Got me a trunk load of shotguns. I got three big bore battle rifles and ammo up the ass. And I ain't safe. I can't protect myself.
Okay, take it easy, pal. Take it easy.
So maybe he just thought he just had enough that he didn't need to get close or something. I don't know. But anyway, yes, he isn't wearing a bulletproof vest, but that would have given some protection. But as it is, it was just steel on skin, and he survived. So
steel on skin, that's the name of the Highlander erotic.
Yes, that is.
We've got it. We've nailed it.
Steel on skin. We've nailed it, I think, is the opening line of the first short story.
And we could also use that as, we can double down and also use that title as the, for our erotic Terminator fiction.
Yes, we can, that's right, yes. Which is, of course, in the Sperminator universe. Please don't put that in. I think this is like
a
hangover.
I have the power of editing now.
This is a hangover from Sex Immortals.
Doing so well.
Yes, we were. We are now just back to business as usual. We won't be going into the madness of the previous episode.
Though we're now back in London for this one.
Yes, because this is an interior set. It's the hospital set. And
presumably it's in the vicinity of, or even just to some degree, like the redressed police station.
I think it is, right, because they filmed in the biscuit factory. I think it's either a redressed station. It's either, yeah, as you said, it's either the police station redressed, or it's just another level of the biscuit factory or something like that. Because it's a big open set, isn't it? I mean, one of the great things about hospital sets is that because they have those wide open corridors, you can get some really good walk and talk tracking shots.
Mm.
And the opening shot to this, I think, is a really good shot as John Polito and Alan North are just walking down, talking about, no, that's great. So, what is it? How's he put it? A guy gets his head chopped off and no one saw anything.
Yeah.
New York for you, or something like that.
It's Frank, will you take it easy? I'm telling you, I checked everywhere with everybody. There just aren't any witnesses.
That's New York for you. 20 people standing around, nobody saw a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I might cut this out, but obviously, yeah, you've heard of Kitty Genovese.
I haven't.
She was a 20-something bartender who was, this is actually pretty dark, raped and killed outside her apartment block in the mid-60s. And apparently loads of people kind of saw it happening, and none of them intervened, none of them called the police. It's what's known as the bystander effect, or Genovese syndrome.
Yes, I have heard of that, yeah, where people just think that someone else will do something.
You know, in all fairness, I understand why none of the people intervened in, like,
yeah.
6'4" guy wielding a sword and lightning is shooting out. You're going to, you know, you might rub a neck. You know, New York is like to rub a neck, as we'll discuss in the next scene. But you're probably not going to intervene. The fact that they didn't get any witnesses, because presumably old man in car is a witness. Yeah. You'd think he's sticking around, unless he doesn't want to be found in that area because he's been done for soliciting prostitutes before.
Yes, because of his carnal proclivities.
Oh my god, that really ties together.
He had to make a quick exit, and yes, old woman in car, when she was finally let go by the Kurgan, said, that's fine, we don't need to go to the police about this, that's fine. But
just don't look in the trunk.
Please don't look in the trunk. But yes, it's... I suppose also with the fact that you've got a floating body there as well, and the Kurgan lifted the guy up with his sword, everyone was thinking, I'm not getting close to that. That looks a bit dangerous. But yeah, so this scene, it's a good scene, this. And it's also the penultimate scene with the cops, isn't it?
Yeah.
We are kind of wrapping up the cops subplot, to which I'm sure all the listeners are thinking, yeah, it's weird that this particular subplot just gets wrapped up without a conclusion. They just get dropped from the film, but we'll talk about that in the next episode. But yeah, this is the penultimate scene with Moran and Bedso.
And it's really nice because you get like the snare drum of the previous scene.
It's a good bleed through, isn't it?
Yeah, bleeds through into the start of this, and you've got, you know, Moran and Bedso coming through the door, which is very, yeah, as you say, it's, you know, hospitals tend to lend themselves to walk and talk. And there are loads of examples of that in, like House, Grey's Anatomy. They're just great spaces, in the same way that, like, the halls are in West Wing.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, places that you can move around and talk so you don't have those static shots. And as we all know, Russell Mulcahy, if he can avoid having a static shot, will do.
Absolutely.
I also really like that when they enter, they're kind of passing through one of the wards with all the older guys on the kind of in hospital beds all looking at them, that the sign behind them above the door says way out, and then it has it in Spanish, Salida.
Oh, okay, that's good.
So they've got the multilingual sign. I'm assuming that's probably accurate.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that's the thing, is that another thing about this film, which had a budget, but it wasn't a huge budget, but it's like there is a lot of attention paid to the verisimilitude in this film. The fact that there are a lot of extras in this scene, there's a lot of guys who are costumed in their dressing gowns and stuff like that, who are just lying on beds, and there's even like a shot where the old guys are looking into the room where the cops are talking to Kirk, and it's like, well, that was another setup you had to do that day. There's a lot of attention paid to detail, and
it's also funny to think that I've almost certainly walked past, like, the kids, the grandkids or the great-grandkids of people in those hospital beds, because they're all presumably Bermondsey natives.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. So yes, it is one of those where it's, again, just a lot of attention paid to detail in this film, which really adds to the believability of it.
Also, like, the fact that, you know, old people in hospital beds, we've talked about the hunger before.
Yes.
That's definitely, yeah.
Go on.
Just in terms of, obviously, in The Hunger, they're studying gerontology, so there are lots of old people in hospital beds. And, just lots of little touches that... And the dialogue in this is great, you know, when they're talking about Kirk Matunas, and, you know, what is he doing there? Oh, he's ex-Vietnam, you know, talk to his CEO, a little paranoid, but he's a good guy.
So tell me about this Matunas. What is he, on drugs?
Well, he's a survival nut.
What do you mean, survival nut?
He's into guns. He was a Marine, Vietnam. I talked to his ex-CEO. They said that the guy was a little paranoid, but he was a good man.
Yeah, I like that. A little paranoid, but he's a good guy. He was driving around New York with... a trunk full of guns.
With an Uzi on the passenger seat.
I'm
still not convinced he hasn't done a drive-by. I'm still...
Yeah, it is one of those. But again, as we talked about on previous episodes, this was the Bernie Govitz thing. This was... Yeah. This film would have come out around the same time as The Equalizer and that kind of stuff. So that sense of New York being kind of the Wild West or the Wild East... and it needed like a lone gunman to go out there and clean up the streets.
It was weirdly topical, isn't it? Especially, and I know that there's something you were going to mention in the next episode... that is very much, kind of dates it, well, literally.
Oh, yes,
the
next episode
literally dates it. And there are some nice shots through, you know, the glass, which again is very much like the police station, because they, you know, there's obviously the glass sort of interview pen.
Yes, yes, indeed, yeah. Yeah, it's a nice kind of subliminal callback to that almost. But it's also one of those things, because on one of the really early episodes, and I think it was with Sarah Johnson, who's been on a few times, the scene with... Fazil in the underground car park. We talked about how it was shot like a Sam Raimi horror film. There's lots of horror film shots and atmosphere. This again is like, there are certain moments in this that are properly like a horror film. So there's that shot that I know that you like where Kirk's talking to the cops and then suddenly the dialogue is drowned out by the score. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, because it cuts to kind of the exterior and you've got the very loud, hospital announcement as well.
Yes, that's right.
Because Kirk kind of beckons them to come closer and like, I've got something to tell you, I know you think I'm crazy. And then all of a sudden it cuts to the, and that's a very like jarring horror moment. It's very, very alienating. And you've got the hospital announcements playing over and he's clearly in a state of some distress.
There's something else I've got to tell you. After he threw me against the wall with his body. Darling.
And it's interesting because we were talking about a little bit about this off mic, where in the novelization, which I recently purchased, if I remember correctly, he just describes the quickening.
Yeah.
But obviously this is his narrative shorthand because the audience doesn't need to have it described to them because they've already just seen it. And it's more interesting to suddenly cut back into the room and have the cops react to being told this, Moran kind of looking a bit dubious and Bedso kind of... And Polito does not get a lot to do in these scenes. I mean, he gets a bit... talking about Matunas' CO, but he does so much with so little. Great reaction, like, you know, just quite watery eyes, quite intense, like a bit uncertain, and he has this little glance away that he's like, he just doesn't want to quite be looking at Matunas at that point.
He really is like, okay, well, you take care now and we'll speak to you again soon. Yeah,
and Moran is so patronizing in this scene throughout, when he like kind of sit, like, he doesn't quite go to the extent of calling him like buddy or champ, but he does, like, he's so patronizing to Matunas throughout this scene.
How you doing, kid?
Well, there's a little bit of that, but there's also like, there's a nice touch, and it could seem out of place, but and it just adds to the tapestry of the film, really. But Matunas, Kirk, says to Moran, depressed? Yeah. And it's because they can't find the killer.
Depressed? Yeah.
And it's like this really... That's just a nice thing where he's let his guard down to this guy. And is there like a kinship that they're recognising between them? Was Moran in Vietnam as well?
Yeah, was he ex-service? That's a good point.
Yeah. But it's a really... And yeah, to your point about the economy of that, of just having the shot of Kirk completely freaking out, and then you have the hospital announcement and also the score, because then it cuts back to the cop saying, okay, don't mention anything about people floating and that kind of stuff. It's like, this is, because Peter says this is getting a bit like
one step beyond.
Yeah,
this is getting like one step beyond.
Yeah, listen, when we get out there, remember, all we got is an eyewitness. Now don't say anything about sword fights in New York City or guys glowing in the dark, for Christ's sake.
That's just, it was just a really, really good way of not having to have Kirk say what we'd just seen. The other thing that I liked about this was that, this does kind of return to the horror feel that we had in the early scenes. But instead of being like the Evil Dead, this is much more like a creepier horror. And some of it actually reminded me of the scenes in the Exorcist movies. It's always, I think that Kim Newman on the Exorcist 3 audio commentary says, it's funny how the Exorcist series has many more scenes that are filmed in hospitals than in churches. And it's like, oh yeah, that is a good point.
It's all about modern society attempting to deal with something. Yeah, it's when they're like the mundane bumped up against the supernatural. Because this is the first time the cops have any knowledge of the fact there is something strange. They know there's a psycho cutting off people's heads.
Yeah.
Possibly extending as far out as Jersey. But hey, that's Jersey.
Yeah.
There was a guy that was killed just like this over in Jersey.
But I figure, what the hell, that's Jersey.
And it's interesting, because they show Matunas Connor's headshot, that wonderful smouldering headshot,
yes.
Because he's the prime suspect.
I understand you saw the guy that stuck you, is that right? You're kidding me, man. Is that him?
Yeah.
And in all fairness, they should not do that. That is very bad practice. If you want to get him ID'd, you need to put him in a fucking lineup, guys. You can't prejudice the investigation by showing him a photo of this one guy.
Particularly is that he's a suspect, and as you said, is the prime suspect, but he's not been charged with anything.
Yeah, exactly. You can't... Yeah, therefore, if later on that comes out in court that you've gone up to somebody in the hospital bed and said, is this the guy that did it to you? It's like...
Well, you were leading the witness there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, that's... Yeah, indeed. God, this is a really, really badly run investigation, isn't it? No wonder the mayor's on the phone to them. Talk about that in the next episode.
yeah, and the fact that you got the smouldering headshot, and the tune's just like, no, it's not him. And the man's like, are you sure? It's like, yeah, because the guy who did it to me was like, you know, I'll insert the description here.
Yeah.
And Moran's just like, oh, shit.
That's right.
Nope. Come on, quit kidding, Matunas. It was dark in that alley.
The freak was trying to kill me. I'll never forget his face. A scar across his neck. That ain't him. Shit.
But the... Yeah, you're right. So this actually is, in a way, working on that same Exorcist level of, like, the rational clashing or knocking up against the supernatural. And, yeah, much like doctors, the cops will always look for the most rational explanation. Yeah, Occam's razor. And here, it just isn't working. But the 80s was also, like, a time when you did have a lot of horror films that were shot in hospitals and things like that. I mean, there's like a...
Oh, we said about The Hunger.
The Hunger, that's right, yeah. And there's a film called The Burning that opens up in a hospital. And there's also a film called Visiting Hours that, like The Burning, was another video nasty. That's like a slasher film that's set in a hospital. So hospitals, I think, have always lent themselves to being good for horror films because no one wants to go to a hospital anyway because...
Well, there's just...
Because you don't go there for really, really good reasons unless it's like a birth, I suppose, or something like that. But yeah. Yes.
And you also mentioned, if you want to mention the cop.
Oh, yes. There's a policeman who actually gets a lot of FaceTime. He doesn't get any lines of dialogue, but it's the cop who opens up the door...
He's well, the one on the left.
Yes. To Matunas' room. And he gets a lot of FaceTime, but it's my theory that this was a guy... It was just like a jobbing actor, just getting extra work, who'd been in some stuff and had been cut because the final shot of this scene, there's Moran and Bedso walking down the corridor and it's all getting a bit like one step beyond. The cop just turns and looks straight down the barrel of the camera for the entire shot. And it's like, I don't care if all that stuff that I've just done already was cut. I'm going to be in this shot. I'm going to be in this film. You will see my face. And it's like, look at that. He's looking right down the barrel of the camera for the entire shot.
And he's got a great cop face, doesn't he? Because he's really...
He does. He has that real kind of tough New York face from the 80s.
And heavy glasses. And I mean, there are also two ways to look at it in universe. If you're going to say, you know, one, that he may have just overheard some of what was just being said.
Yep.
So he's watching them go, being like, what the fuck? Or, because he does... He looks a bit serial killer-y, doesn't he?
He does. Because actually, yeah, he reminds me... And it's not... He reminds me of an actor... Oh, I can't remember his name now. He was in Maniac. Very famous. He's also in The Godfather Part 2.
Joe Spinell?
Joe Spinell, thank you. So he looks a little bit like a Joe Spinell type. Maybe a broader face. All that works for in-universe, but he isn't looking at the cops. He's looking right down the barrel of the camera. And it's like, I'm going to get my face in this. If you go back and watch the scene, he's on screen right. And you just can't miss him because he's the one looking straight at the camera.
So maybe, yeah, the acid has just kicked in. He's just broken the fourth wall. Yeah. He's like, oh my God, there's an audience.
That's right.
What's going on?
Who are those people looking at me?
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, yeah. Like a horror comedy set in like somewhere like a hospital. And somebody just keeps having moments where they keep perceiving like a chthonic presence that actually, as it turns out, is just the movie that's being made.
Yes, that would. Okay, right. There's some legs there. Excellent. Have I got anything else here?
Well, actually, I also want to mention that we just rewatched the clips on the Blu-ray. And when you start the Blu-ray, it has obviously the different language, different country options, including Australia.
Yes, and we need to go and look at that, because if there's an Australian dub of this film, oh my god, that would be the most amazing thing ever. Because of course, when Mad Max and Mad Max 2, which was renamed the Road Warrior for the States, when they were released in the States, they had American dubs. So you're not hearing any of the original voices, including Mel Gibson's.
Mad Max!
Go ahead.
Hey, Max!
Can you hear me, Max?
Go ahead.
If they went and did a reverse on this, so that you've got the cast of Home and Away and Neighbours doing all the voices, that would be amazing.
Should we have a go at that?
After you.
McLeod, where are you from?
You look like a Spanish peacock. That's some bloody clobber, mate.
Ramirez. G'day. G'day, I'm Juan Sanchez Ramirez. And in that moment, the chance of them ever getting Russell Mulcahy on the podcast slipped away.
That's right. They were passable Australian accents. No, they were actually just hate crimes, I'm afraid. So that's that. Oh, sorry.
Also, having mentioned it, Neighbours ends at the end of this month. Last episode of Neighbours.
Yeah, it does. Which is, it's weird that. That's like when, and again, this is slightly off topic, so you can cut it. But this is like when Grange Hill ended. So for any non-UK audiences, Grange Hill was a very, very long-running show about a school. All the people that were really upset that Grange Hill was ending were the people that hadn't watched it in 30 years. And I got to get the impression that there's a little bit of that with Neighbours. I know that Neighbours still has a very loyal UK viewing base, but it's like I was sad when I saw that Neighbours was ending. But when was the last time you watched Neighbours? 1990?
Yeah, I definitely haven't watched it in at least 15 years. But I will tune in for the final episode.
Yeah, me too.
Because they just bring everyone back. It's like, it's Harold! Harold's back!
Well, he came back anyway, didn't he? Because he died. Then it turns out that he'd got amnesia and just came back as a series regular.
Apparently Guy Pearce is coming back.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures.
And Kylie and
And Jason,
yeah.
So that's going to be... Yes, I will definitely watch that because it'll be sweet. And it's also really good. I mean, there's no reason for Guy Pearce to need to go back other than the fact that he's clearly just a lovely man who's just doing it because why wouldn't you go back? I mean, it's a lovely thing to do. So it'll be Mike and Jane again, and it's like, oh, I can do this. I can just see myself welling up at that. It's like, God, everything sets me off now.
Potentially the viewing figures that they're going to get for that is like, if we could just have done this, then we could have saved the show.
We've actually paid for another series in the amount of advertising revenue that's been made from that audience share.
But the thing is, Guy, you have to stay.
Yeah, you have to stay. But I think that Mark and Elaine Gregerson from the Honeymoon Period podcast, who you would have heard on this show, I think that Mark really likes Neighbours, and Mark just shouts out if I'm wrong on that. So I know that he'll be watching, and I bet he'll be choking up as well.
Well, yeah, Mark's been our font of all knowledge when it comes to soaps,
which has
proven remarkably useful on this, because there are a lot of soap actors.
Absolutely. And Elaine, huge apologies if you also like Neighbours, and I just forgot. But, yes, yeah, so anyway, so... Yeah, Neighbours is finishing as well, so that's a shame. It all ties in.
None of it ties in.
Sometimes when we say it all ties in, I just get an image of a six-year-old doing a jigsaw by just hammering the pieces in. It will fit. It will fit. Okay, is there anything else to say on this particular scene?
No, I think that's it for me.
And I think that's it for me as well. Is there anything? I'm just trying to think of anything else that occurred to me as I was watching it. I think that's it. Okay, cool.
Well, in which case, thank you very much, Mr. Daniel.
And thank you.
And if our listeners would like to find you online, where can they do so?
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at rob_a_Daniel. You can find my writing at electric-shadows.com, filmstories.co.uk, lovehorror.co.uk. We also do a sister podcast called The Movie Robcast, in which we talk about films more generally. That's Mr. Wallace and myself. And you can find that wherever you're listening to this. And you can follow that on Twitter at Movie Robcast.
Great. And yeah, if you want to find me online, you can do so on Twitter at Robert M. Wallace. You can also find my writing, such as it is, at Of All The Film Sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. If you want to follow this podcast, you can do so on Twitter at McLeod Time. You can also drop us an email if you've got any Highlander-related stories, if you'd like to even maybe come on as a guest.
Though we've got enough episodes to do that now.
The window for that is narrowing. Yeah, we're getting there. But you can, in any case, you can email us at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com. And well, if you've enjoyed this, or even if you haven't, please do rate and review. It really does help, and it's lovely to get the feedback. So, until next time, all there is left to say is...
Another time, McCloud!
And then I'm definitely going to play an excerpt of the Neighbours theme tune. That's where